Oh, might be too loud. So hi everyone, I'm Bernardo Zamora. I work in the Windows Phone Store. I'm in charge of developer monetization. What it really means is making money for all of you that are making apps for Windows Phone. And I'm also a developer myself. I have developed more than 30 apps for Windows Phone, more than 15 apps for Windows 8. And actually, I'm part of a panel tomorrow of some of the most successful developers in the Windows Phone platform. So every day, every single day, I wake up in the morning and I'm trying to think, how are you going to make more money? And I also think, how is that going to help me? So at the end, it's all aligned. It's how are we all going to make more money? And I have access to all the reports of all the apps that we have on the Windows Phone Store. And I see some apps that are doing really bad, that are making very little revenue. And I've seen some apps that are making tremendous amount of revenue. If I were making that revenue, I would not be in the Windows Phone Store. I would be making my own business. So what I decided to do is, for the past month, we've been doing some deep analysis on the apps that have been most successful in terms of revenue. So here today, I'm going to talk about revenue. If you're interested in just pure downloads of some other metric, this might be an interesting talk, but not the ideal talk. If you're here to learn about what the best of the best apps do to make more revenue, this is the right session for you. So we did a deep analysis on the apps that are making most money on all the different business models that are being the highest grossing. And here, what I want to share with you is what we've learned. And throughout this analysis, I've shared many things that I would like to also implement in my own apps, and I urge you to do the same thing for you, because that will increase the probability of making more revenue in your apps. Here's my email. I'll have it at the end also in case you have questions. So please make sure you ask anything you want. This is the right moment to find more about how to improve your success. And I do have a phone here. I've been told I will give it at the end to the best question. So keep those questions coming at the end also. So the first thing that I want to understand, that I want you to have in your mind, it's a framework of how to think about monetization. So as you're thinking of building your app, the first thing that we've seen is more important is choose the right business model. And we'll walk later through the different business models that Windows Phone supports. Once you've chosen the right business model, create the app, publish your app to the widest audience possible. Then do marketing of your app, measure the performance, see what's working, not working, optimize your app, and then learn for the next version of the app. So this, as a general framework, we'll use it during the presentation. Seems very obvious, but as we go into the details, you'll see not everyone has implemented the best practices. And what you'll see today in this presentation are examples of the best of the best apps, the highest grossing apps in every category, in all the different business models. So I urge you to bring your phone, your Windows phone. If you have an iPhone, just get rid of it, get a Windows phone, and try these apps. And try them during the session, try them later. Keep them in your list, because that also are good examples of things you can analyze and understand why they're successful. So let's start with the first topic, which is choosing the business model. Windows Phone, similar to other platforms, has three ways of producing revenue for you as a developer. Paid, in-app purchase, and mobile advertising. So let's start with the first one, paid. The first category of apps that are paid. What we've seen, we've analyzed most of these apps, and one of the first things we've noticed is pretty much all the highest grossing apps have trial. This is a feature not available in other operating systems, in iOS and Android, and it's the ability to offer the app for a certain period of time, for a certain limited feature set for trial, and then the user is compelled to buy the rest of the app and convert the trial to paid. If we analyze the 50 highest grossing apps in all our store in the last few months, 94% of them have trial. So guidance is very simple: add trial to your app. It seems obvious, but it's as you go down in the monetization, the top 5,000 apps, only half of them use trial, and so on. It goes down. So it's a good practice. But it's not enough. It's not enough to add trial. You have to really think about how to add trial to make it successful. On average, most of the apps out there have between 1 to 5% trial conversion rate. That means from all the trial downloads that you see in Dev Center, you can download your report there, only between 1 and 5 convert to paid. If you're doing less than 1%, then I think you need to tweak your application and try different options. Trial is very open. You can do whatever you want with it. If you are getting more than 5%, I think you're doing a really great job converting trial to paid users. So you can try and learn. But we did dig deeper to understand what are some apps doing that are able to convert, in some cases, 30%, 40% of the users from trial to paid. And at a high level, obviously, all these apps have such a compelling experience that users are using the app, and then they want to actually go and buy it to be able to get the additional features. I mean, that's a given. And they are using typically two strategies that we see in the top highest grossing apps that convert from trial to paid. The first strategy is time limited. So they give the user a certain amount of time to try the app, and then the trial needs to be done to be able to continue using the app. The second strategy is feature limited. So you only have a subset of the features, but you already get a sense of what the app can do, and you want more. So let's look at two examples. Again, these are some of the apps that have the highest conversion rate from trial to paid. And you see two of them. ProShot is a photo manipulation app. This is a feature-limited example where that you can do most of the modifications of your photos within the app, but then you cannot save them unless you get the paid version. So convert to trial to paid. So that's one. The other option is time-limited. In this case, Weatherflow from Gregory Oros. It's a beautiful app that shows the weather, and it has a three-day time limit. So let me actually show you how the app works. And let's take Weatherflow as an example. So if I press 7 here, okay, so you see here my phone on the left, I have many of these apps. So let's take Weatherflow. You can see, for example, Weatherflow here has a live tile, which is a great example of making sure you continue to interact with the user. And I actually have purchased that app for myself because I think it's a great app. What compelled me to buy it? Well, I've used it for 3 days, and I like it a lot. And then as you get into the app, the first screen you see every time you launch the app is a clear explanation of the time period that you still have remaining, a clear explanation of what's the benefit of converting from trial to paid, and a visual example of what you're getting. So you can then continue to use the app, and then you have you pin it, you get the alerts on the weather, all that. And again, every time you use it for the next 3 days, it tells you to upgrade. And they have a very high conversion rate between trial and paid. So these are two examples of ways of converting trial to paid. So in addition to that, let's see what are other techniques that are being used by the highest grossing paid apps. So these are, again, two examples, one app, one game, that are among our top grossing ones. And as you see, again, all of them are extremely high quality. They are the best of the best in their genre. The high quality Jack Tools Pro, for example, it has a series of tools. And then as you use the tools to help you understand how the phone works and to help you get a ruler and to get compass, many different tools. If you want to get more tools because they're so good, you want to, again, get the paid version. And Spectral Souls is another game, extremely successful, high quality content, lots of content, and as you want to play more, then your urge, or you want to actually go and pay for the full version. So these are just some quotes I got from the last couple of days from some of these apps. That's what you should be aiming to create. You should be aiming to create the best app in your genre, and that clearly will help you drive the trial to conversion if you actually choose the right technique to convert from trial to paid. So these are some examples that you can, again, play with and understand what they're doing to convert to paid. But they have to be the best, clearly the best in their category, and there are many of them in many different categories. So that's the paid model. That's a traditional model most of us know about. The next business model that already is very widely adopted is in-app purchase. So in-app purchase, as you all know, is selling digital items inside the app. And you can sell consumables, you can sell durables, you can sell many different types of items. And it's really the really good business model for apps that are going to use the freemium strategy, which is have a free version to be able to get as many different users as possible downloading and using the app, engaging the user, and then extending the value of the app through the in-app purchase. So again, all these apps have a great value proposition. They allow you to use the app for a while, and then if you want to accelerate or get the premium versions, you are offered the option of in-app purchase. So again, we analyzed the top 30 apps with highest in-app revenue, and we found four common traits. The first one is the in-app purchase is not an add-on. Later at the end, they thought, okay, I have an app, let's put in-app purchase there. Now, it is the apps are designed from the ground up, thinking about in-app purchase. The layout of the screen, the design, the gameplay, or the feature set is designed thinking about in-app purchase. So as you start designing your app or redesigning your existing app, you have to think about that model from the very beginning. Then all of them allow you to use the app even without in-app purchase. So you get a sense of the app. You get a sense of what the app does. You get a sense of what the game does, and you get to play several levels enough so you like it, and then you want to accelerate usage or get all the features. So among the top 30, we did not see one that required in-app purchase to be used. All of them allow you to use the app. Most of them, not all, but most of them, you have also a version for Windows Phone 7. Even though Windows Phone 7 doesn't support in-app purchase, they still have a version for Windows Phone 7 because they still can monetize through ads or through paid, and they also capture the user with your app, and then when they move to Windows Phone 8, which is a rapid trend we're seeing, then they move to your in-app paid version of the app. The other common characteristic is that the apps offer multiple options, multiple packs. So it's not one price of in-app purchase. They give you a 99 cent, a $2, $5, $10, $20. So you get, you give your users different options and choices. And then some users might want to purchase the 99 cent, some users might want to purchase the $10, but then they actually decide what is best for them. So let's look at a couple of examples here. There's examples that are using durables, and there are examples that are using consumables. And probably most of you know, but let me just remind you. Durables are items that are bought within the app, and they're owned forever by the user, typically used for a new map, a game level, or moving to a premium version. That way you have that item, and you can use it forever within the app. Consumables are in-app items that are consumed. You buy them, you use them, and then you can buy more and more and more of those. And typical examples that we saw in those top apps are gold, credit, currency for the game, book chapters, more ringtones. So again, things that you can consume more. And the top examples that we have use both of these techniques, depending on the type of app. So let me actually walk you through sleep. Sleep is an application to help you sleep. It's an application that has sounds. So you, again, this one has also a lifestyle. So I'm going to select it here and give me a second. Lock screen here. So the sleep app is an application that allows you to choose, if you see on the left hand side, to choose different sounds, if from fire to rain to wind. And I wasn't aware, but this is a very popular app because people want to put it at night to be able to go to sleep. So it's not only designed with a very nice metro style. It has timers at night. You can choose even thunder or frogs within each of the different screens. So you have lots of different sounds. But it seems people, after a month of listening to the same sounds, they want different sounds. They want to go to sleep with a different one. Well, no worry. In-app purchase to the rescue here. As you go here to the right, you start to see some of the ones with a red bar at the bottom. Those are the premium packs. And they have many of them. So again, they give different options. So if you want to go to sleep with rain or with a train, you have all these options. And you click on it, and as you click on it, here, let me just get rid of the timer. Okay, cancel. Okay. Here it is. So as you click on the in-app purchase, it gives you a definition, a clear example, a clear text telling you what you're buying. This is very important because users are concerned what's going to happen with their money. Well, here it is clearly. This is how much money you're going to spend. This is exactly what you're going to get. Oh, you don't like it, you can always cancel, and then again, you have all the options. And these options are always in front of you. So if you're using your app, eventually, after a few days, you'll go and buy some of those. So again, you saw this app uses all the best practices that we saw from all the apps, and they're like, surprisingly, I haven't used this, I can sleep well, but it seems lots of people like it, and it's a high revenue for this developer. So it's another way of making money through in-app purchase. So you see, again, durable consumables, and at the bottom I have another example, which is a card game that uses currency. You can go again and download that as another example of an app that uses coins to move through the game, and then you can buy in-app purchase different packages to accelerate gameplay. So let's look at another example in detail. This is another one of the top apps, highest grossing in-app purchase, which is Shotly Golf. Shotly Golf is probably, according to them, one of the leading applications for golf players. And there are lots of golf players. This one has maps, so you know where you're playing, and you can see the maps of the golf courses. It can track score. And I don't know exactly all it does. Doesn't matter, because if you see in the middle of the screen, it tells you exactly what you're getting. So this application is kind of time limited. For a week, it allows you to use all the features. You love those features, you want those features. But after a week, time trial is over and you get to choose. You can keep the basic version, the pro version, or the ultra version. And all of that is through in-app purchase. And you get a notice that this is really what's happening. You have a trial and the trial ends. And then it gives you a very clear list in the middle of all the features that you're getting for $29. And this is not the ultra, this is just the pro version. Again, high grossing. They have a version for Windows Phone 7, as I mentioned, and they give users a choice. So you can get to choose from multiple different options what you want, from not paying to getting the best of the best if you're a golf lover. So these are examples of applications that use in a purchase. But we've also been asked a lot, should I use trial? Or should I use free and then go in a purchase? Well, it depends on what your app needs to do and what's your business strategy. But a framework to think about it is paid with trial. Your app is going to be listed in the paid apps, so probably it's going to get less downloads. The feature is managed by the OS. That way, you don't have to do a lot of work, so it's much simpler. You have one option. Either trial and convert to paid, or that's it, there's no more options. And it's available for Windows Phone 7 and Windows Phone 8. So it's available to the widest set of phones out there. On the other hand, in-app purchase requires a little bit more work. It's only available for Windows Phone 8, but you have much more flexibility. You can do consumables, you can do durables, you can have multiple of them. You can show different in-app purchase settings depending on which user you are, which country you are. You have much more flexibility. So this is just a framework of what you think will work better for your app. Both options, as you see, are successful depending on the first question. What does your app need to do? What's the right business model that's going to make it more successful? So we've seen some of the highest grossing paid apps, some of the highest grossing in-app purchase apps. Now let's see some of the highest grossing mobile-based apps. So this is apps that are using ads to generate revenue. This business model, the top apps that are making most revenue on ads are apps that are used many hours by each user, many, many hours. So if there's an app that people use every day for half an hour, then that's a great candidate. As I mentioned at the beginning, I built many apps. Recently, a few months ago, I launched a new app, a unit converter. You convert from many unit to any unit. You convert kilograms to pounds. You can convert, I don't know, many different currencies. I put ads in that app. Guess what happened? Well, I'm making almost no money on ads there because it's not the right business model for that app. Because that app, you might convert a unit, spend 10 seconds, and then you don't use that app for a month. So clearly that wasn't the right business model. So as you think about what your app is, if your app is going to be used a lot of time by your users, then this is a great business model. And if you decide to do it this way, make sure the ads are not intrusive. You don't have more than one ad in your screen. Because you want users to have a great experience in your app. Why? Because you want them to be using it more and more and more. basically most all the apps that I analyzed, if you see the comments and the feedback, all say addictive, the best app, I cannot stop it. 3 a.m., they're going to fire me from work, I can't stop playing it. Those are the apps that work well with ads because people use it a lot. The other thing you have to do is set auto-collapse to true. It's just a technical term to actually hide the app when there's the ad, when there's no ad. And typically you choose auto-refresh on, and we'll see an example where every 30 seconds the auto-refreshes, you don't have to do anything. And of course, another great thing we saw is applications catch the error when there's no ad from your ad control and show something else, show another ad control from another vendor. So let me give you an example again of one of my apps. I use this example for showing how the ad at the top is part of the design. And I'm getting lots of reviews saying that the ad is not intrusive, that it's part of the design, it's beautiful, it doesn't really hinder gameplay. It feels like a natural part of the app. Of course, if you get the paid version, that goes away. A couple of interesting things that are examples of those best practices is the auto refresh. Typically, ads get refreshed automatically every 30 seconds. I did not want that because I don't want the ad to be refreshed and start moving while the pieces are moving. So it interrupts the seamless flow of the app. I want, when the user is actually doing something, I want no ads to be interrupting what they're doing and the animations. So I actually manually trigger every 30 or 40 seconds the refresh when there's nothing happening on the screen so it doesn't distract the user from gameplay. That's one thing I do. The other thing I do is I always show an ad. So either I use the Microsoft Ad Control and I trap the exception if there's no ad. I show, in this case, ads from Ad Duplex, which is another one of the third-party networks. And if that doesn't have an ad, I show my own ads to promote my apps within my apps. So that's another best practice we've seen in many apps, to always show an ad and to cross-promote between the apps. So if you have more than one app, this is a great thing you can do to cross-promote if there are no ads there. Another example, again, this is one of the top grossing ad-based apps, is Parking Car by SlickDroid. As you see, you're seeing a common theme. All of these apps are usable by a wide variety of users, from young to old, from all different cultures. Very simple to use, and there's an ad there. Whenever there's no ad, it collapses itself, and you don't see any ad there. And it actually, the ad, if you see at the bottom, it moves and adapts to the game screen design, so it's not interrupting the gameplay. And remember I mentioned this model is for apps that are used many hours. Well, I already installed this a week ago, tested it, tried it. I've already solved about 35 levels, so I think I'm doing pretty good. Well, this game has 3,000 levels, 3,000 puzzles. So I have a few more hours of gameplay. So again, this will be able to show a lot more ads while I'm getting addicted to this game. Now, just a raise of hand here. Who has used the Microsoft Ad Control in their apps? So very few. Well, it is the widest, the adopted ad control in the Windows Phone ecosystem. It has, based on my own experience, fairly good fill rates and eCPM in some countries. Not in all of the countries in the world, but in those I think it's doing a good job. And it's really easy to add and it's very reliable. So let's, if you see on the screen, you see some of the code, the XAML code to add the ad control. But let's actually look at a real example, just how to add the ad control, which I think it's as simple as it can be. So I have a project, a blank project in Visual Studio. So I have XAML here. And the only thing I have to do is, number one, go to the toolbox, find the ad control, drag the ad control, position it whatever I want in the screen. So now let me put it here. Then the next thing I have to do is I go to the manifest and ensure the right flags I turn on. These are the flags that give the permissions to the app to access capabilities needed by the ad control. And then I run it. That's all you have to do. So you should see the test ad control appear in a few seconds if we have network. There it is. Of course, this is a test ad. You have to go to Pub Center, get your ad unit, your app ID, and substitute it here when I'm marking it in the code. That's all you have to do to be able to add the ad control. So it's extremely simple. Okay, now it's up to you to design an app that draws a lot of users, but the ad control is something that you shouldn't be concerned about. It's fairly easy to add. And as I mentioned before, I work in Microsoft. I have used the Microsoft Ad Control, but I also have used many of the other third-party ad controls. So if you think you should be getting more ads in certain countries that you're getting a lot of downloads and you're not getting them through the Microsoft Ad Control, I mean, you're free to try it. You can use it as a backup ad control. And you see a list that includes AdDuplex that I mentioned, AdMob from Google, MobFox, Matto, and many others. This is just a list of all the different ad controls that I am aware of today, that we're aware of, that are available for Windows Phone. So again, you're open to experiment. They all work with Windows Phone. And that's those other alternatives if you want to try it. My recommendation is start with the Microsoft Ad Control and then use some of the others as backup if the Microsoft Ad Control doesn't show ads. But again, it's your choice. There are other options available out there. So we've seen how to make money or some of the best practices with paid apps, with in-app purchase-based apps, with mobile advertising, so that you've chosen the right model. So you created your app. That's your secret sauce, your idea. Now let's publish your app. Let's make sure you do the right things to publish it and increase your probability of revenue. So as I mentioned before, as you're going to publish, think that competition in the Windows Phone Store is getting more intense. We're getting more than 160,000 apps, and many of them are very good in their category. So you have to ensure that you land with a punch. You land with a really great app, better than anything available in other platforms, that it has really high quality sounds and graphics, that is simple to use. Again, if it's really too complex and it takes too much time to learn, then it will discourage users. You want users to start using it right away. Of course, rock solid, no crashes. None of the apps that we saw in the top 50 in any category are crashing, are very reliable. Usable by the widest number of users possible. If you have an app that is very local, try to create localized experiences for the different countries. That helps getting more users. And just make sure that you respond to the comments and you learn about the comments to be able to improve your app. And some analysis we did is out of the top 50 paid apps, pretty much all of them have greater than 4 rating, and more than half have a rating of 4.4 or higher. So quality is a driver, again, for downloads, therefore a driver for revenue. So that's what you have to do. You have to create an app that will be compelling, that will have the right business model. We, Microsoft, what we're working on is to make sure that the app you create, the beautiful app you create, gets purchased, gets monetized. And what we've done is we have the largest footprint that compared to other stores in many areas. We have the largest footprint in countries, markets. We are available in 191 markets. We are the only one of iOS on Google that has Alipay. Alipay is the number one purchase instrument in China. We already beat Google in the number of MO billing partners. So you purchase applications through your mobile billing, through your carrier. So why is all that important? All of that is important because all of these 191 markets, consumers there can purchase apps, can use in-app purchase in all of those countries. Alipay, as we launched Alipay in China, we've seen a 20x number of purchases in China compared to users having credit card. This is an example where in a country where credit card penetration is not very high. So giving them access to the equivalent of PayPal there has multiplied by 20x the number of purchases of your apps or your in-app purchase. And finally, every time we introduce MO billing in a country, we've seen between 2 and 8x growth again in the number of purchases. Consumers don't need a credit card there. They can use the MO billing, they charge it to your AT&T, and then you're done, the purchase is done. So we're doing that, all that, and we continue to do that, adding more and more payment instruments, more mobile operator billing partners to be able, for all the more users across the world to be able to purchase your apps. That's our promise to you, and we're just asking for your own side of the bargain who create amazing apps for us. The next thing that you have to think about when you're starting to publish your app is which countries should I optimize for? Where are the users coming from? And I don't think we've published this data before broadly. It is an analysis of where the app downloads are coming from Windows Phone. And that is from this calendar year, from January to May. And the first time I did this analysis a couple weeks ago, I was surprised. I don't know if you're surprised, but it's the number one country with most downloads as of the last 5 months, is China. The number two, Latin America, and so on, you can see there. So if you're only publishing your app to the US, well, then you're missing a big opportunity. And so you have to think about which countries you're publishing. We have 191 markets. It takes 10 minutes, 5 minutes to cross-submit and publish to all these markets. Make sure you publish to as many of those countries. Just 10 minutes of your time allows you to sell your app in 191 markets, pretty much all the world. So it takes very little effort from your side to be able to reach this huge audience. And that's the platform we're building for you. And again, following the same trend, we analyzed the top 15 apps that are making highest revenue. And guess what? Most of them are published in at least 187 countries. So again, they're trying to reach as many possible users as possible. So think about how many countries, how many markets are you published in. So now you've published to as many countries as possible. Now you have to do market. You have to let the world know that your app exists. So my team, the Windows Phone Store team, is trying to do the best they can to promote your apps. So you created your app, you have the right business model, you have a beautiful graphics, it's high quality, it's in the store, published in all the markets. Now, how do users out there find about it? Well, we have many things we can do. One of them is merchandising. Merchandising is taking some of the highest quality apps that show some of the differentiated value of Windows Phone 8, and we promote it. If you go to your Windows Phone, you can see many apps that are promoted every day. We promote more than probably 2,000 apps every month, are different across the different markets. And we do that to help promote the best apps out there, to tell users which are the best apps. And they love it, they trust us because they know we're giving them really good recommendations. So we promote it on the web, we promote it on the phone. That's what we do. Well, what do you have to do? Again, create great apps. Also, create apps that take advantage of Windows Phone 8 capabilities. Lifestyles, lock screen, things like that. All of those things are things we also want to promote as part of the platform. Those apps have a higher probability of getting promoted. And when we promote an app, we've seen between 2 to 10x time the downloads during the time we promote it. So it's a fairly effective tool to drive downloads of certain apps. The other thing we do is give you all the tools to be able to improve your app. If your app has better reviews, it will be downloaded more, and therefore it will bring more revenue. We give you access to all the user feedback, translated all the feedback from all over the world, translated to your own language. And we give you access to very detailed crash reports, all of that in Dev Center. So at the bottom, actually, this is the example of Bagamo that I was showing, that in a period of 3 months, every couple of weekends, I spend some time and try to find the bugs that I reported there and diminish it. Right now, it has probably 10 crashes a day. And a few months ago, I was doing like 400 crashes a day. So it's an example of what those tools are available for you to go and fix your app. Apps that don't crash get better reviews. The next thing that we do is we show your app in all the lists, including the new and rising on your own category, apps and games. So it's in the list. And users actually look at what's the first thing they look in your app? Well, they see the icon. The next thing they do is click on it and see the first two lines of description of the app. So you have to make sure the icon is professionally designed and the first two lines of description are extremely clear. And again, there's no bug. So if my first apps, I designed them myself and the icons were not really good. But the last ones, I've hired designers and some graphic designers that can help you do all the graphics of the app and the graphic of the icon. So that's something you clearly have to do. Don't because again, the marketplace is getting a lot more good apps, so it's getting a lot more competitive. So those are things we can do. But a large portion also of the downloads come from your own efforts. What you have to do to make sure there are more downloads. So what are things that we've seen some of the best practices that apps do to get more downloads? The first, again, this seems very, very obvious, but example after example, we've seen that they don't do that. Promote it yourself through your own website, social media, your own blogs, the magazines that write articles about the app. I've seen hundreds, actually, probably hundreds of thousands of downloads come from some magazine articles of my apps. And you should be doing the same thing. Use the badge. There's a link to the badge. We have a badge that says download for Windows Phone. That's another great way of posting in your homepage and letting people know we have a version for Windows Phone. Another technique we've seen a lot is buy ads in Windows Phone. And I use AdDuplex, but there are several others. You can go buy ads to promote your own app. I mean, it's simple, it's not that expensive, and it will bring you additional downloads. So that's direct promotion. What else can you do? Well, it's difficult to get a user, but once you get a user to download your app and use it, you want to continue to have this user engaged. So here's two examples from my own home screen. This is part of my own home screen in my own phone. I have Weatherflow that I mentioned. I have my trips. It gives me information about the trips, information about the weather. So it's there. It's a live tile. So I always have that app there. I always am reminded of that app. Therefore, I use it more. So that's one example, live tiles, notifications. The other best practice that we've seen is, in this case, for example, Dread versus Zombies by Rebellion. They have daily deals. So you go in and you choose 4 hours, 12 hours, 24 hours. So you have to come back to the app 4 hours or 12 hours or 24 hours later to use it again and get some benefit. Do a special level that they have for you at that time, and then you get additional bonuses. So again, these are tricks to try to get the user to come back to your app. Getting users is difficult. These are tricks to get them to come back. And again, this is games, but this is apps. It applies to all type of applications. The next trick, I'm actually going to show it in the phone. So let me see. Seven. Here's a game called 3D Bowling by A Mobile. And the screen is locked. Very secure. Okay. So we'll see here. Perfect. You'll see here 3D Bowling. And clearly by the icon, you know which is the one that is the bowling app. So this app, it has ads, but also it does a lot of cross promotion. This company has a lot of apps in our ecosystem. So this is the home screen. You see what you need to do. And what do you see on the top left? On the top left, they are promoting their own apps. So let me see. I'm going to just try to play bowling, go here, and then go back. And so I'm going to choose it here and then come back here. And you see now it changed. Now it's free sale. So again, this is a way, if you have more than one app, this is a great way of cross-promoting between your apps. So again, if you have apps that consumers like a lot and you do this, well, then they'll entice them to try your other apps again. And I think A Mobile goes even further. When I try to exit the app, well, before I exit, they give me an example of another app that they have in their portfolio if I want to try it or not. So again, they changed again in the corner, and it gives you another example here. So this is ways to, within your app, in a very natural way, not very obtrusive, not very aggressive, they are able to promote their own apps. So these are, again, examples of things you have to do, and a large portion of the downloads of an app come from this type of efforts. In the Windows Phone Store, we're doing a lot to help you, but there are many things you can do your own, and the best apps are doing that. So, great business model, you have a great app, it's published everywhere. And now we've been asked by developers a lot of times, okay, what languages should I support? Should I target Windows Phone 8 or Windows Phone 7? So again, we drill down a little bit more on the store, and the first thing we found is that Windows Phone 8 users are growing like a rocket. In the last, I think Windows Phone 8 has been in the market for 6 months, already more than 50% of the downloads are coming from Windows Phone 8 devices. And what we've seen is Windows Phone 8 users download twice the amount of apps that Windows Phone 7 users. What it means to me clearly is if you want, you could do a Windows Phone 7 version, but really you should optimize for Windows Phone 8 users. This trend is going to continue. And we have lots of new devices, low-cost devices with Windows Phone 8. I think the Lumia 520 is one of those. And they're selling, they're our number one sellers probably, or among the top three. So it's clearly something you have to strongly consider now, developing a version for Windows Phone 8. And doing that allows you to add things like in-app purchase, which again we saw it's a great way of monetizing, allows you C++ development for better games to be able to compete with the other games out there. Tile and lock screen notifications, again, helps you engage the user a lot more, and so on. So there's some features. Clearly, most of my apps now are targeted towards Windows Phone 8. In cases I'm using ads, I also develop a version for Windows Phone 7 to be able to cover as much footprint as possible. But the best features now are coming to Windows Phone 8, which is clearly going to continue to take most of the market share from Windows Phone 7. The other question we get is, which languages should I support? Well, we did an analysis of the languages used by the users downloading the apps. And number one language, now this was no surprise to me, is English. English is the number one language that is used by most users. But it's only used by a quarter of our users. The other quarter is Chinese. And then Spanish and Russian and so on. So I would think that it would make sense to localize in more languages. And we looked again at the top apps that are making the highest revenue. And again, what did we find? They do that. There are some apps that are localized in 20 languages. There are some apps localized in 3 or 4. But on average, the top apps localize in at least 8 languages. Now, as I was thinking about this, I said, wow, localizing, it's a big effort. Well, you could take steps. You could do phases. You could start with just localizing the metadata. So you can submit a resource package to light up the different languages, and then just change the app name, description, screenshot, the keywords, the metadata. So at least the description and the images are available in different languages. Or you can actually start to do more. You can make it local aware, so you can understand different symbols and how the date and the currency is supported. Or you can go and even localize the UI. And then you can even do more, and you can do local marketing for some of these markets that, as you saw, are fairly large. And there's some resources that we have to help you. There's some websites that are specialized in localizing text for apps. Tetras, iBabylon do exactly just that. That's their business. So they even localize words. They're specialized in apps, so they don't translate books. Their resources very at a reasonable cost, they do this for you. Or we also have the multilingual toolkit, released very recently, that helps you do the localization of the apps. And of course, as you do your own marketing, you should be using the localized badges that we have in different languages. So again, these are resources you can do to start localizing in phases. And as you see, being successful and making much more revenue takes more effort. But I think with the guidance that you're getting here, we'll tell you where are the areas that you should focus your efforts on. So with all these ideas, make sure you create a good app. Make sure you go in and use Visual Studio to create your app. Then go to DevCenter. DevCenter is the place where you submit your app and manage all your app lifecycle. As you submit your app, probably not everybody knows, we have a great Windows Phone app, which is the DevCenter app, that allows you to take DevCenter with you wherever you go. And that app allows you to see all the data from your apps on the go. And start doing it today. We have a summer promotion that started today. That is, instead of the $99 price for registration in DevCenter, it's going to be $19 for 60 days. So I urge you to take advantage of that opportunity now to start submitting the apps and being successful. And remember, as I was reading all this presentation, some of these tips sounded obvious. Yeah, now of course I have to create a high-quality app. Of course there should be no crashes. Of course I should put more languages. It's all of course, but you actually have to do it. The top apps that are making the highest revenue are doing all of these things. So it takes more effort, but the rewards are there for the apps that are willing to do it, for the apps that are willing to spend more time. So I'm here to answer any questions you have. And there's a list of other resources that point to many of the things I talked about today, from blog postings about how to market your app, using in a purchase, merchandising, tips from our merchandising team, tell you what things they merchandise, how to localize, DevCenter, PopCenter, the badges, and so on. So there's a lot of resources that will help you do exactly what we said to do. It's to be successful. So I think there's a microphone, so I would just ask you to go to the microphone to be able to ask questions. And best question gets a phone. Thank you.
So I have a question.
Okay, go ahead.
So I've seen a lot of like statistics like 2x and 3x kind of numbers. But when early iPhone stuff came out, you see publications of somebody made a certain number of dollars. So do you have any sort of case studies of how much money people are actually making in the Windows Marketplace, like paid apps or in-app advertising and things like that? Real numbers, not just it's better than it used to be. Do you have any real dollar amounts that you can share?
Yes, I do. I don't think I have the PR okay to talk about it. So what I can tell you is that for an indie developer, we have actually more than hundreds of developers that are, I say they could make a living out of this, or more. But I cannot share numbers with you, because I wasn't prepared to share those today. Oh, we have developers that are making that. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Again, not everybody, but some of the best apps for sure. Yeah, yeah. Especially, and this is talking indies, larger developers are making more. Yes?
I really enjoyed, was it your, when you were on AppBiz Dev Podcast? I thought it was very well done. Was it in, it was a.
Which one?
The AppBiz Dev Podcast. With,
the podcast I did a few days ago. A few weeks ago, yes.
Great information, and I took some of your tips from that right away and implemented. I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit to, you were saying that you did a lot of number crunching based upon the information in the last 30 days. Conversion rate, was it of in-app purchases versus like just doing a trial, since trials do have a lot less downloads initially?
I don't think I compare them both, but what I know is the best apps using trial are making about the same amount of money as the best apps using in-app purchase. So I would say you can be successful using any of those two mechanisms. Yeah.
And one quick little follow-up. I'm just wondering, is it what your thoughts are on light versions of apps that, you know, duplicate apps of the same thing, just as it stripped down versions, just to get the free hit users, is it that download more free apps?
So that's something we've seen a lot, that developers create a free version and a paid version with more features. That helps, because the free version, you get more downloads, and then you point them to the paid version. Yeah, that's another alternative, absolutely.
So whether you are doing in-app purchase or advertising, I mean, clearly it would make sense that you would want to target the high activity pages or features for those premium features, or a place to put advertising. So is there a built-in or a third-party tool that would help you track and provide analytics regarding what is your most popular features within the app?
Yes, I've never used them, but I know that in our partner page we have at least one. I don't recall the name right now, but if you can see me later, we can look it up in our Dev Center page. There's at least one partner that tracks analytics about feature usage in your app. Yes. I mean, you can build it your own, and if you have access to a cloud database, but there's a third-party toolkit that does exactly that, for tracking both crashes and feature usage. Yeah. So just come see me later. It's in our Dev Center page, and where it lists all the partners that we have.
Hi. So it seems that if you're able to get the user's, you know, device time, there's plenty of options how to monetize with your app. But how about something that brings value by being on the phone? For example, your unit converter. People use it once a month maybe, but it's just there. So what would you see as the best way to monetize something like that, that brings value by being on your phone when you need it?
That one, I think the only way to be successful is clearly not ads. It's either paid, trial to paid, or in a purchase. The problem is a unit converter really has only this amount of value for users. So it's only going to make this amount of money. I think you have to think, what else can it do to make it more valuable, therefore more users can actually decide to buy it. Because by itself, there's a large part of functionality free. So I don't think there's a lot to be millionaire, but I think if you actually put the right value in a purchase, I think it can be a good additional source of income, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, but ads is really not the one.
Yeah,
I have to remove
ads
from
obvious.
That one, yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. I'll take a couple more questions.
Okay. So we have an app that has in-app upgrades, and it's based on this presentation, it's clear that it's probably not the best choice for our app. So how would you suggest unwinding that and changing that to like a trial by pay or some other model? Like, is that even, or do you like abandon it and move on to another product?
So if you're really not making enough revenue with the model that you have today, well, you can clearly take that app, modify it, and create another version, and that replaces that one, if you value the users that you already have. The other option is creating another separate version, totally different, and which is maybe called a little bit differently, had different feature sets, and start with that one from scratch. I don't know how many users do you have already today, and if those are valuable, then it's probably worth evolving your app to the new version. But it's a good question. What happens with the users that already purchase in a purchase?
Yeah, like it has high use rate. We have about 25,000 users, and they spend hours a day in it. But how we did the in-app upgrades isn't really, I think, relevant to their use.
Yeah, yeah. I have to think a little bit about that. It's not trivial, because the worst thing you can do is angry, get your customers angry.
Right.
Suddenly, if you take features off, then it might be a bad thing. Well, what I've done in what I've seen also done is, you store some data in the settings in the app, in the isolated storage, that indicates this is a previous user. So, for example, when you create the new version, if it was a previous user upgrading, you enable those features again. So you don't give them a bad experience with your app. If it's a brand new user, it's the first time they use the app, then they get the normal experience. That would be one way of upgrading your existing customers without having them lose those features. And if you don't know how to do that, just come see me later. You're just storing some things in the isolated storage and then checking if that data is there or not. If it's not there, then it's a new installation. If it's there, it's an old installation. So you give them the old rights.
All right.
Yeah, you definitely want to have your users happy. They will recommend your app more, and then that drives more usage.
Hi, I really like your last slide on localization, and we tend to do everything that we can across the board, but just out of curiosity, I was wondering if you had any metrics on percent revenue increase as you move across the different tiers of localization support, like per region.
That's a great question, and somebody asked me that a few days ago before coming to actually give the talk, and I just didn't have time to do the analysis, so I owe you that one, probably for one of my next blog posts.
Okay, well, thanks.
Purchasing options in any of the stores?
Just repeating the question, if there's an option or a plan to offer volume purchase, not that I'm aware of. This is one of the things we're considering, but not that I'm aware of today. Oh, there's another one there. Yeah,
sorry, hiding there. There's been a bit of talk about the transition from being an indie developer to being a proper company.
Yeah.
Could you talk a little bit about how you would see that transition, whether you should do something part-time and develop something yourself to between going to something where you're going to take on full-time responsibility over an app?
Yeah. So as you are part-time, you have only some weekends and some part-time to build your app, and then the revenue expectations are this. But as you become a company, you have more expenses, you have more people, then you have to actually get a higher revenue. So clearly, starting small is good, but then you have to actually get to a certain point when there's enough revenue or almost enough revenue that you feel you can stop your day job and move to this. And then that should give you enough time to create more apps. And once you have, let's say, double the revenue of that, then you can start creating a company and then hiring a couple of people. One thing that I've learned from many successful and unsuccessful companies I've been part of, is you have to really keep track of your costs. If you start getting an office and you start hiring people, those are costs that for sure you're going to hit. So even today, I try to avoid those. And I hire part-time people to do the work. So I hire one of my favorite graphic designers is from Serbia. And he does all the graphic design, sends it to me on the weekend. We work on it, and then he goes off. And he probably that's also his part-time, so we kind of meet on the weekends. And then I have a couple others that do sound, and they send me the sounds on the weekend. So this part-time, so you don't have the fixed cost, and then allows you to grow until you have enough momentum. Clearly, as you start to become a company, you are faced with bigger competitors that have bigger pockets. So you have to be nimble and have great graphic design, great programming, and then start think about how you're going to use that to multiply your revenue. For example, create a version for Windows 8. My apps take a couple weekends to do that. So again, that's with little effort, you get a lot more potential revenue. So those are the things you have to think as you grow without adding a lot more initial costs.
Yeah, and sorry, just typically, how many apps would you need to become sustainable?
How many?
Yeah,
I've seen developers that have 20 apps that are making just enough revenue, and I have developers seeing with two apps that are making a lot of revenue. So it really is of the quality of the individual apps, not 20. I've seen one that has like 80 apps, and really not. It's just more of the quality. I would rather spend time creating an awesome app that people are going to love and be addicted, one or two, instead of 20 not so good ones. Because each of those is going to feed itself, and it's actually going to become more than just another app. If you reach the top 10, then you clearly grow a lot more. So I'll take one more question, and then we're done.
In order to determine which category and which specific app you're going to create, it seems like it's really helpful to know how much money there is in a category or how much competition there is. Is that information available from Microsoft at all? How much, you know, broken down by category in sales numbers?
No, we haven't published that information, except we have some metrics that actually are going to be part of our Dev Center homepage that talk about the categories that where there's more demand than supply. So that's one info we have today in Dev Center. So if you go to Dev Center homepage, you should see those four metrics. But more in-depth analysis, no, that's actually something in my to-dos for my next blog posting.
So that is coming, though.
That I would like to do it. I cannot promise, but I would like to. I would
you
like
heard
to do
it first
in detail. But today you can go to Dev Center, and there's some infographics about the top four categories that are underserved. So that's something you can start with, which is apps that are most downloaded, but the catalog is smaller.
That's fantastic. So that's, thank you.
No, welcome. Thank you very much, everyone. I'm going to be here in case you have any questions.